Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thank you, Earl. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. Our second hour underway, and we are pumped to go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome onto the show a two-time Super Bowl champ, a seven-time Pro Bowler, four-time first-team All-Pro. In fact, believe it or not, back in 91, he was one of the last two All-Pros on offense or defense Washington has had. They have not had one since a punter in 1996, a former Walter Payton Man of the Year and a Hall of Famer. The great Daryl Green is with us on Grant and Danny. Daryl, hope you're wearing your gold jacket today as you talk to us. How are you, sir?
Good morning. How's everything, man? We did talk about three months ago. So maybe we can just keep it about every quarter. We'll talk every quarter.
We'd like
our
that.
Our quarterly meeting with Daryl Green.
Yeah, me and Danny would love that, man. That'd be a lot of fun. How often do you wear that gold jacket, though? How often do you put it on? You walk around the house in it?
The gold jacket? Oh, no. I don't wear the gold jacket, no. That's only for I have a youth program that I do that's in partnership with the Hall of Fame. So I do it with that. And we've been doing Zoom, but we've been wearing just shirts. So, no, the gold jacket just kind of sits and just chills out. It's got its own, like, closet. It's like it's got a, you know, its own closet, you know. And, you know, it's got, like, air conditioning and oxygen going in there and all that stuff. Like, man, this guy Daryl Green's crazy, huh?
It's in a chamber.
It's just right in there with everything else in the closet, man. Yes, it is.
It would be my pajamas and my going out coat, Daryl. We got you on. I got to ask you about cornerback play. Tell me what you've seen from the youngsters. Tell me what you've seen from Ronald Darby, Kendall Fuller, Jimmy Moreland, everybody. Just to assess that group, I got to pick your brain with your expertise.
Well, I'm always critical of the corner position, you know, because, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of times it seems like people play to bend but don't break, or they play to try to get the interception, and they don't just play the game to try to, you know, it's a lethargic game, you know, where you know, it's gladiating. It's trying to make sure that this guy doesn't catch any of the balls and just do your job, you know, and not all that, you know, people like to celebrate. So I'm always critical of these guys, and particularly if you don't, you know, I'm from an era, man, if I shut Jerry Rice down and he caught one ball for a touchdown for 5 yards, then they would discredit all you. I had two interceptions. He only caught one ball for a touchdown, and then they just discredit everything you did. So, you know, that's kind of the mindset that I came up under, where you got to get it done 100%. And so, you know, until they get to that, Moreland is young, and I'm still watching him to see if he's going to come into his confidence. Fuller was kind of crazy. You know, that's the kid that left here, right? He went to Kansas City. And, you know, I thought he had some potential anyway. Now, he's not an outside guy. I think he's more of an inside guy. Matter of fact, Moreland is probably more inside, too. But the inside zone, not inside man, because inside man is ridiculous, because the receiver's got the whole field. So, you know, when he's in that slot. So they're inside zone players, and I think they can be successful with that. You know, obviously the guy that left, what's the guy that left that came from the Carolina Panthers?
Josh Norman.
Josh Norman was a zone guy, you know, but we paid him like he was going to be, you know, the next shutdown corner, and everybody got mad. And so I'm always discombobulated around that. Like, hey, man, the guy is playing. He's playing what they're asking him to play at this time in this era. And so I kind of always adjust my brain to say, okay, I've got to learn how to appreciate what they're doing. And so with that, all that said, you know, they're playing the system, and I think they're playing it good enough. They got to have to get better. But I think they're doing, you know, they're getting turnovers, and they're playing, but they're nowhere near where they should or want to be. That's for
Daryl
sure.
Daryl Green with us on Grant and Danny. Settle a little debate for me. I talk to some friends about this all the time. Is it possible in today's day and age, for unless you're let's say a top three or four corner, to just be a shutdown guy with the rules anymore? Like, how different do you think it is based on the design of the game as far as covering a receiver today versus in your prime?
Well, I'm gonna throw it back at you. What do you mean by the rules? What rules are you talking about that makes it difficult to do what I was doing?
Well, so like illegal contact.
What rule would stop me from, like, what? I mean, what do you mean?
So there's
a
time where you can
5 yards.
Yep.
5 yards. It's always been not always been 5 yards. It used to be all over the place, like in college. But it's 5 yards if you press. And then when the ball, if your head is not around and you hit the guy, then it's a pass interference. If you're not right. Looking at the ball and going at the ball, I don't buy this stuff about the game is different. Mano a mano is mano a mano. Stop the guy, cover the guy, make sure he don't get the ball. Be with him, but you can't touch him early. The game hasn't changed. I mean, okay, I'm going to back up. You go ahead and finish. Are you saying that there is something that is different?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. I mean, that's the debate that's had all the time. Is the idea is that a corner anymore, that every rule that is basically put into place seems to benefit the offense and the wide receiver for scoring, for TV ratings, and things like that.
It's been that way. No, that's not new. Every year when the referees came to the training camp, and they would put on the film and they would go over all the new rules. And typically the rules were something about where, you know, you can't do this on defense, you can't do – and we always had new rules, and you just – nobody ever complained about them.
It wasn't a big
deal. No, it was not. No, I mean, you know, gosh, they're going to change that rule. Oh, and then you get the Q&A with the referee. You've never heard that in media or discussions. You just go, okay, this is a new rule, and then you go with it. So I think it's overkill. And some of that stuff was birthed out of the concussion era, you know, that we've gone through the last 5 years, the concussion thing. But they haven't changed anything, you know. Actually, I take that back. They've changed sort of a, you know, you hit the guy, you know, when he's he's not looking away. What's the word they use when he's not
blindside?
Protected.
No, like he's not. He's unprotected,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, unprotected. Oh, you know, he's like, yeah. So
defenseless.
But no, otherwise, if you are actually gonna get on a guy. If you're Daryl Green or Deion Sanders, you're gonna lock these guys up. You can still do the same thing you always been doing. Just go with the guy and be where the ball is. They don't play like that. Go ahead.
If you were coaching DBs today, is there something that was coached when you were playing that might not be now? Like, where would you start in terms of your conversation with those guys?
I would start. I would want all my guys to focus on being great man-on-man cover guys because, you know, I can play zone. I mean, zone is, you know, I mean, goodness, who can't play zone if you're an NFL player? But I'm talking about developing your personal skills, footwork, you know, speed turning, coming in and out of your break, how your elbows and your arms, how you use your feet, you know, back in the day, you know, it's called like a T-step, you know, if you're going to T-step or you're going to do this short step, you know, what are you going to do? But I would develop my guys as individual champions. I would try to make everybody individual. Even like when I used to do training some guys, I would say, okay, I'm not training any safeties. So all the safeties have to be corners because when a corner gets old, he goes to safety. When a safety gets old, he go home. And so you know, you've seen that. You've seen
line.
The different guys.
That's a great line. That's a great
yeah, so,
line.
So I would train everybody in a cornerback mentality from a coverage standpoint. That's what I would do. And then we can work from there as a one-on-one, man-on-man guy. And then we'll work from there. So I would spend time in the offseason trying to develop every individual to be a great one-on-one shut down corner. And then if I got that, then I got everything. Now we can play zone. I can got some guys who can safeties, who got good feet, who could cover if they have to. And that's what I would do. That's what I would do. But I know how to teach that. Most coaches don't. I played 20 seasons, including plus four in college, plus two in high school. So 26 years of football for me. I never had one cornerback coach teach me anything. And that's not pride or that's not belittling anybody. They just didn't. All this stuff was developed on my own.
Marty Schottenheimer tried to, Daryl.
Whew. Don't go there now. Don't go there. Let's stay happy now. Let's keep smiling today. Let's keep everybody happy today. Don't mess with that. You a silly man. You a silly.
I had to poke the bear a little bit. That's all.
Yeah, you did. You always do.
Hey, and Daryl Green with us here on Grant and Danny. Daryl, can I ask you this? In all your playing days, you mentioned all the years you played at such a high level. There had to be some years or some times where the quarterback and maybe the offense was struggling. How hard is that to sort of keep chopping wood on defense and do your job, just feeling like we could give them the ball at the 1 yard line and they'd find a way to punt? You know what I mean? Like, how frustrating is that? How challenging is that?
Well, I think, you know, if you go back and look at, we were relatively successful for 11 years. I was with Joe Gibbs for 11 years and then 9 years of a bunch of other stuff. But if I go back to the successful years, the successful teams don't have that kind of thing. You know, they don't have that kind of finger pointing, you know, give me the ball. You know, a winning team, you typically going to see there's going to be a character-based component. There's going to be a unity, you know, that's just going to be that. You just don't see that stuff. That stuff don't fit in a winning team. That kind of stuff fits in losing teams when I remember this, Joe Gibbs, I thought I learned this from him, talking about the hardest part of his job was to pick the players. And what he said was that he's trying to find one of two players, a player who is going to be okay when we are when we find ourselves 0-12, and a player who's going to be okay when we find ourselves 12-0. So when we're 12-0, man, I'm not getting the ball. You know, dude, we're 12-0. And then when we're 0-12, man, well, it's his fault. They need to get him. You know, so that was the key, the character aspect of a player and who you have on your team and who's coaching your team is really important. If you're going to win, now, if you're just going to play, well, you got all kind of jacklegs, coaches, players, you know, just all kind of Looney Tunes and all kind of loony stuff going on. But I was fortunate enough to see it. I saw it. I saw it from day one. We went to the Super Bowl my rookie year. They won the Super Bowl the previous year. And then we went to two more Super Bowls and a bunch of playoffs and championships. And I saw the difference in when all those guys left. And then now we've got Norv Turner and all these guys that came in, and not personal against them, but they couldn't train. They didn't have the same concept. You know, Norv Turner brought a lot of old ex-Cowboys in, has-been guys, and then it just went and snowballed from there and all the way through. And just we never had – I knew what winning was. I had been a part of it. I knew it wasn't just how talented a guy was, but it was who the guy was. You know, for me, you know, and I humbly say this, you know, I played 20 years. That's a lot. The best and the longest in any Redskin in history, a Washington football team and player team now in history, that it wasn't just about how great I could play. But I think that the human being that I operated as and that my teammates and some of those coaches and people were, that's what make us champions. That's what they haven't. That's what they're up against. If they're going to surpass us, it's going to take more than a trophy, hoisting a trophy. It's going to take community. It's going to take family. It's going to take commitment to being who you're supposed to be when you're that highly respected and highly sought after with that much exposure. That's what a championship. That's what the D.C. area is looking for. They're not just looking for a hoist the trophy. They're looking for the whole package, and thank God Joe Gibbs, Bethard, Cook, and all of them brought that to the city at that time. So that's what I remember, That's what I think it requires.
Darryl Green with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We could talk ball with him all day. He's probably got better things to do. But I did want to ask you before we let you go, Darryl, because one of the reasons we're having you on is I know that you're involved in a program that's trying to support health benefits related to COVID. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, this is a product. It's called Holodyne, H-A-L-O-D-I-N-E, Holodyne, and Holodyne.com. So Holodyne, so, you know, in the COVID world, you know, the a couple of things. Number one, the COVID is a viral spore that comes into a person's nostrils primarily. That's why they say cover your nose and your mouth. It also, then it domicile is the domicile there, meaning it'll just, it's like you plant a seed on the ground, it's going to sit, and then, you know, you water it, and then eventually then you it sprouts. Well, this thing can sit primarily, and I'm not a doctor, but it can sit primarily for, say, 4 hours to 2 days, 72 hours, what have you. And so 3 days or whatever. So what happens is, when you if you got it on your hands, you would sanitize your hands, and the sanitizer would kill your virus on your hands in maybe 15 seconds, and then it would last maybe another 20 seconds. But this thing actually does sanitize your nostrils when that spore is sitting in there. And so for the Washington team, for example, they're using it. So the recommendation was, hey, everybody use it in the morning. Everybody, because remember, they can't PPE. So then everybody use it at lunchtime. Then go off to practice, tackle, whatever. And then come in and shower and use it again, because it'll kill the virus sitting in your nostrils. And you just take a few drops and you drop them in your nostrils. Just let it go down and kind of wash through there, and then kills it in 15 seconds. And the product does it actually at about 99% accuracy, and so proficiency. And so it's been a really special thing using it at Columbia University. We have the call with the Rams tomorrow to try to wrap that up with them. Philadelphia has been reaching out to us. Matt Linus, I got to call him. I saw he got injured, but he actually came to me early on. The doctor asked him because his wife is pregnant, and he was really concerned for her. But it's a good product. It's really, and when you talk about getting a test to tell you if you have it, use the mask to try not to get it. This is the only thing in the world, in America, should I say, that we have at least before it becomes a virus in you, that it could kill it. It could sanitize, could disinfect for you. And it's safe. And matter of fact, well, one of our doctors, he was just telling me yesterday, matter of fact, because we got little babies, little kids too. And he said he used a swab in his 3-year-old's nose and even his 8-year-old nose. And matter of fact, he was one of the catalysts to them developing this product. It was created by doctors and chemists. And he led the COVID team in Connecticut at the hospital. And he caught the virus. His wife caught it. The 8-year-old caught it. And then the 3 and the 6-year-old caught it. And so that's what birthed this, the idea of these chemists going to work to try to find the, because otherwise, how could the doctors even operate? Because obviously, you do know that the mask is not 100%. The mask is not even, you know, government regulated for most. I mean, most people walk around with, I saw the coach on the team last night with like a bandana. That's not some kind of a regulated material. So this thing really is pretty interesting. Holodyne.com, H-A-L-O-D-I-N-E. Go online, check it out. But more importantly, look at the research and look at what they talk about. I'm not a doctor. I'm not trying to tell you something that a doctor, you know, go talk to your doctor first, do what you got to do. But I don't walk out the door without it. And so, you know, it works. The doctors use it. I'm using it. And I'm 60. I'm not going out without it. And anybody that have a chance to get in touch with it, they would be wise to do it, because this virus is serious. And I've had a lot of family members with it. And it's not anything to play with. And right now, this is all we have. Besides taking a test to tell you if you have it, covering your face to try not to get it, this is the only thing that before it actually can germinate into a virus in you that can actually disinfect it. within your nostrils. That's
Daryl. Thank you so much for joining us. We got to jump. Apologies, but this was awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thank you so much. Hit me back another time, man. Take care.
All good.
We will. Thank you. Absolutely. You know we will. Hall of Famer Daryl Green, one of the best on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Hey, guys. Grant Paulson from my friends at Lindsay Chevrolet. I always tell you about Lindsay Chevrolet because I got my last several cars from Lindsay Chevrolet. Wife drives a Equinox. I drive a Buick Regal I got used off their lot. I know I can trust those guys. Shop now and save at lindsaychevy.com or Lindsay Chevrolet in Woodbridge. The GM over there is Paul Smith. He's a big listener, big sports fan. He'll take great care of you. Camaros, Malibus, Traxxas, up to 8,000 off. Equinoxes, Blazers, Traverses, up to 8,000 off. And you can take it from me. They're going to save you more because they got their Lindsay Love It deals right now that the other dealerships can't and won't make. You're going to love it at Lindsay. Find new roads. He's Danny, I'm Grant, you're listening to The Fan. The loss of Matt Ioannidis, he just heard Earl talking about it, is going to be massive for this team. You look at the numbers this year, he's a pocket pusher, and he can collapse the pocket from the inside out, which is really the trend that everyone's looking for in the league right now, because you can get push into a quarterback's face. It just forces them into bad decisions. Ioannidis, a sack and a half and two tackles for loss on the season. You go back to the beginning of last year, he's right there at the top of the board in terms of sacks for this team. He gets to the quarterback more often with pass rush than Payne and Allen, who do other things better than Ioannidis, undoubtedly. But the former fifth-round pick has become such a success story, Danny. He's not that unheralded here. I think this fan base properly understands how good he is. Yeah, but he's one of those guys. I'm sure you have the same experience when you're doing hits out of market before games like I do each week, where when you're on the phone with someone in Cleveland before you play the Browns, they go, what about Sweat? What about Allen? What about Payne? What about Chase Young? I mean, they don't even know who Matt Ioannidis is. And the point is, he might be the best of the bunch in terms of the down defensive lineman. Not having him is a dagger. But they're used to this. He's gotten hurt over the last few seasons consistently now.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I mean, it's one of those things that the league is all about trends and then responses to those trends, right? Remember when the Wildcat was the thing? Like, everyone had to have a Wildcat. Everyone had to have Ronnie Brown faking two handoffs and then going for 4 yards, and everyone was amazed by it. Well, the league adjusted and figured it out. Remember, read option was the thing. And then, you know, people have slowly kind of adjusted to that. Now it's RPOs, and again, the trends always evolve. But anyway, the larger point is, quick passing has become the thing. It's what everybody majors in. And that doesn't benefit defensive ends going all the way around tackles. Think of Myles Garrett sprinting past Jaron Christian. But usually it takes a little bit longer than that. Pass rush up the middle is the most disruptive thing possible. A, shortest distance between two points. But B, limiting throwing lanes, causing, preventing quarterbacks from stepping up, just sort of taking things away directly has become such a premium. You see some of these pass rushers who aren't always lining up on the outside. I mean, think of J.J. Watt, who's going to cross 100 sacks, or may already have. He's not always at the end in a 34. He's going up against guards sometimes. And you look at some of the matchups where guys maybe aren't as good. I know there are more good guards and highly paid guards and centers now than there have ever been. But your left tackle is your premium guy. You really want your best rusher going up against that guy all the time? No, you're going to find the Schweitzers, the Wes Martins, the reclamation projects, and have your best guy go up against them. So it is a loss, man. Ioannidis is really good. Led the team in sacks last year, as you said.
To your point on Watt, and I would throw Donald into that. You know, Watt, who's
on the
inside way more often than on the outside, it seems like these days. The Defensive Player of the Year award has been won, it seems like, for the last 5 years by those couple of guys, for the most part, off and on.
Yeah.
But that's what you're talking about. That's what you're looking at. It's that type of impact. And you saw this last night a couple of times. You see it all the time, though. How often does a quarterback just barely get rid of a ball on a throw down field for a completion of 13 to 15 yards or something while they're about to get drilled from the blind side or while they're taking a hit from an oncoming rusher from the outside? That throw can't be made if that rush is coming from the inside. You're now changing your arm slot. You're trying to kind of jump over top of the offensive lineman being pushed into your lap while you make the throw. Your accuracy is not going to be as good because you don't have your base and your mechanics are off. So it just makes common sense, I'd say, that the more push you get from the inside than the outside, the better off you're going to be. So that's a real dagger for them. The Dontrelle Inman injury, we can get to kind of in a second. I don't think that's necessarily going to hurt them a lot. I know he played very well. He caught two touchdowns. He's been consistent for Dwayne Haskins. But it will get their young guys some experience. Now, I was talking to someone with the organization in the last couple of days, and they said that Gandy Golden is starting to come on. He's starting to get it. The game's starting to slow down a little bit for him. But the wheels have been spinning pretty quick. You know, that's a big leap, man. Liberty to Washington. It's not just like driving a few hours and you get there and now you keep playing football. So he may not be quite ready for those bright lights. Same with Isaiah Wright. So they're going to lose something if they don't have Inman. But what you'll lose in terms of preparedness or knowing where to cut off a route or to help out your quarterback, you might get in some athleticism and some things he might be able to do after the catch. And then obviously we wait and see with bated breath on Chase Young with the groin injury. You know, what is going to come of the timeline for his return? Chase Young, 2.5 sacks, most on the team, 3.5 TFLs. Only Montez Sweat, who's played more, has more than him at this point. I don't think I need to tell anyone that if they don't have Chase Young, it changes a lot. Because in addition to just what he's doing when he's getting one-on-one matchups, you saw it this past week. I mean, it was pretty amazing to me in just his third game, the amount of double teams and chips and attention he was getting. You were already seeing that come to fruition, and that's going to allow guys like Payne and Allen to feast.
Yeah, here's what it looked like. Cleveland, in their report and their decision to how they're going to approach the game, said, "We're concerned about Chase Young." That was sort of the pretty obvious tell right there. And
it's almost like when we talk about baseball, like pitching to a lineup. That
you're
guy
not throwing
won't
to Juan
beat
Soto.
Us.
Exactly.
Someone else is going to have to. And that's how they treated Chase Young already.
Yeah. And now, again, Washington is in better shape than anybody else would be if Chase Young goes down for an extended period of time or a few
weeks.
True. But you're not better. I mean, you're just not. You lose that guy, you're not as good. But going to Ryan Kerrigan, playing probably twice as many snaps as he would have otherwise, you could do a lot worse in terms of drop-off from starter to backup. Just kind of that way that they'll work their rotation.
Him and Ioannidis gone, you go from like a 9 of a defensive line probably to 6.5 or a 7. I mean, it's a drop-off, but this is why a lot of people felt like, and I think it's been proven that taking Chase Young was really smart, but you don't have to go Chase Young. You're really good on your defensive line with or without him. The difference is if he's a transcendent talent, which is the hope, you know, maybe the ceiling now is that championship level 12-win type defensive line that can will you to victories. While we're talking Chase Young, I thought we could look at the rookie class really quickly, 3 games into the season. So Young goes second overall. We've seen his impact. It's very obvious. Their next pick was 64 selections later in the third round. They took Antonio Gibson out of Memphis. I really like Gibson's game. He's had 2 9-yard runs, one in each of the last 2 games, that have kind of shown me that this guy is cut from a little bit of a different cloth. He has not broken out. I mean, the numbers, if you're just looking at carries, yards, catches, yards, those types of things, there's nothing that you're going to ooh and ah over. But some of the analytics on, you know, people that he's made miss and missed tackles forced and yards he got that weren't blocked, they all favor him pretty handsomely over the other backs in the backfield. What do you think of Gibson so far?
He's their best running back, but I don't know how much that means. We always have these kind of debates where he's the best of this bunch, but is he as good as, and you could sort of fill in the blank, some of the other players around the league. I mean, you see guys doing what he's done in terms of getting opportunities, rushing, making some guys miss, having nice highlight runs, etc. You know, be they the Miles Gaskins of the world or, you know, Devin Singletary or a million other guys around the league that aren't really highly touted and heralded. But he's their best, and what I like the most about it is he's doing that the same as some of these other guys who are lifelong career running backs. Does that make any sense? The fact that he's still so new at this and doing it at the NFL level and he's league average and adequate and kind of normal, the fact that it doesn't look like, you know, he's bewildered and confused, like he's unfrozen caveman lawyer, he looks good to me. And he's been doing this for an hour and a half. That's really encouraging in terms of upside and what I've seen from him. So nothing to blow your skirt up just yet. You're not going, they found the next Christian McCaffrey or this is a superstar. Right now, he's fine. He's good even. And that's what's cool about it to me is that tells me there's a lot more to his game that's where you may be able to see at some point.
The fourth round saw Washington make 2 picks. At 108, they went with Sadiq Charles, the tackle, out of LSU, and at 142, that's where they got Antonio Gandy-Golden, the wideout, out of Liberty. Charles has not played. He's barely practiced lately. I don't really know what's going on with it. Good news is he's going to get to play this year a bunch because their offensive line is built in a way where whether it's at left tackle or at one of the guard positions, if they kick him inside, there are vacancies here. I mean, there are spots that he can keep warm where he could try to figure out on the fly how to play football in this league. So we're going to see him when he's healthy. We just haven't yet. So that has been a bit of a debacle for him. Gandy Golden had an end around that went for 20 yards. We've seen him catch his first pass against Arizona. Was targeted a couple of times without any catches in week three in Cleveland. Again, as I said, you know, from what I'm told, he's just having a little bit harder time maybe making that
understandable
jump. There's a lot being thrown at him. And it's not that surprising. But I just think he needs to play. Like, the more he plays, the better. I know some coaches are hesitant with Rashad Ross. People would always say, get that guy on the field. And I would talk to coaches, and they'd say, well, we tried to. He lined up in the wrong formation, or he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's Gandy Golden's issue necessarily, but you just want to see him, you see it click where he starts to feel confident and comfortable and he's not thinking, he's just playing. Hopefully we're getting closer to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's chicken of the, not chicken of the egg, that's not the right phrase. It's what's your priority? And the priority right now is to give Dwayne Haskins the best chance and develop him. If that's at the expense of trotting a rookie wide receiver on the field that's making a jump from a non-power college football program in Liberty, then you probably have to wait longer for Gandy Golden. If this is, you know, veteran quarterback group, trot the kid out there. Let me see what we got. But you got to do everything you can to make sure that Haskins is taken care of and settled and sorted. So the learning curve may be longer there for Gandy Golden, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that because I've got my list of priorities as to how I approach my sort of playing time decisions. If there's a veteran, now there may not be now, obviously, if Inman's hurt for more than a few weeks ahead of Gandy Golden, but if he doesn't quite get it, I can't do that to my rookie. I could do that to my 10-year journeyman Jack veteran. If Case Keenum is starting for me, Gandy Golden, please, at once. And the fact that he hadn't played already, I would be so impossible to deal with here every Monday morning if this is all he'd gotten with some journeyman behind center. I'm sure they're catchers. But for me, for the priority is Haskins, and I got to make sure that he's all set, even if it means that Gandy Golden has to wait longer.
Four late-round picks made, and really one that's influenced outcomes to this point, and that's Cameron Curl.
Cameron Curl.
The 216th pick in the draft, a seventh-rounder, a safety out of Arkansas, and they found a real niche for him. It seems like, you know, this is kind of why they drafted him. He does not play the same role as Collins or Apke. He covers a little bit. He comes downhill in the box. And, I wouldn't throw him out at free safety for Troy Apke anytime soon. They've carved out a role that seems to be working for him, and he is helping them. You're listening to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Our double play is next, and we're going blitzing in 16 minutes on The Fan. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, 12 minutes away from the Beltway Blitz, and at 12:18, why did Ron Rivera's tone change so much on Dwayne Haskins overnight? He went from right after the game, seeming like he was ready to go to battle with Haskins for 16 games, doesn't matter how he played, came back to the drawing board with a very different tune yesterday. What changed? What do we think happened there? We'll get into that coming up early next hour. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. I'll be quick and hop out of your way here, Danny. How often do you think, and I guess season it matters, but during the summer you should cut your grass? How often?
You're asking the wrong dude because, as you know, we don't really have much of a lawn at the Hooray residence. But in time before time, when I lived at a place that did have lawns, I would say every couple of weeks, which I know sounds like a lot, but that was my instinct, was every couple of weeks. And I'd probably let it go to every three, sometimes four, but it was every couple of weekends I would think about that.
That's aggressive. All right, I'm a once every 2 weeks guy or so.
Mm-hmm.
My neighbor's a once a week guy, and he's kind of got me in my head a little bit. He's got me a little self-conscious because I don't want him thinking, you know, we live in this neighborhood, very close proximity between the houses. They're single-family homes, but they're kind of dropped in, you know, all the same-looking house, side-by-side kind of deal. And I'm in my head space because he's out there working on his lawn all the time, And I feel like I do a pretty good job with mine. He's next level, though. He's got a little more time or just more interest and passion. I'm not sure. But he's out there, and he's grinding on that lawn every single week. And I've always been a once every other week guy, and I've always had my lawn in pretty good shape comparative to my neighbors. But he's pummeling me. He's got people, you know, aerating it for the fall and doing all this stuff. So I wonder what your advice would be. Is it to keep going every other week? Do I match him and do it the day after he does it every week so that, you know, we're even, we're on the same playing length? Or do I try not to let me get in my own head about this?
It's a great question by you. Now, how's his driveway? Is it cleaner than yours? Because there's no way it's cleaner than yours. There's no way, right, with how much you sweep it.
I got to be honest, my driveway pummels all the driveways. I sweep my driveway every day at this point, every day.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm saying. There was a rumor there was a leaf that landed on your driveway 6 weeks ago. It was gone in 60 seconds. With Nick Cage. Here's my point. You can win at that and come in fifth or sixth in the neighborhood on your lawn, or you can decide full commitment, we're going all in on all this stuff. We're going to be the best at this too. You know what I'm saying? Like, treat it like the Olympics. It's like, well, the U.S. doesn't really have, we're not that good at fencing. Well, let's invest in fencing then. See what I'm saying? It's about what you want. What's in your heart? Do you want to win that thing? Or are you content just having a nice enough lawn? Are you content being good enough, which I would be? Or do you need to beat this SOB?
No, I don't need to have a better lawn. It's more that I don't want him, when he goes back in his house and talks to his wife, to say, Paulson's too young to be slacking on his lawn. You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying.
Like, we're the young couple with the young kid. And, you know, they expect a lot from us, I think. I think they think we have energy, which I don't have. I think they think we're active, which we're not particularly active. I think they're looking for something out of me that I might not be able to provide.
You don't have to live up to his expectations. Live up to your own. You and your wife set those expectations. It's not about the external. It's about the internal. This has been my self-help seminar.
Very thoughtful and eloquent. See, this is why I come to Danny Rhea. It's time for his double play.
I'll do this quick, GP, and this is not – I'm not doing politics. I don't care, and you guys don't care either. But I had a Zoom call last night with a bunch of friends – and a guy I know who was a few years behind me in high school is running for D.C. City Council. And just we had a nice Zoom call, and he, you know, laid out what his plans were and what he hoped and those other kind of things. And it was really, really cool. It was informative. All I could think the entire time, though, was, can you imagine going through that? Can you imagine somebody saying, what I should probably do is open myself up to constant criticism, constantly have to sell myself each and every day and explain why this person that I'm pointing at right now, is better than that person. It takes such an interesting personality type that I simply don't have. I'm terrible at selling myself as it is, but that's what you're doing, basically. You're interviewing for a job in public for a year as he's running for a local council seat. It's a relatively small-time thing when you compare it with, like, a Senate race or the run for president or whatever, but it's just this constant grind where you have to tell everybody why you're better than somebody else. It's really, really hard to do, and I marvel at it. That's all.
Extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, right?
I don't know that many people that are good at that. I mean, there are certain people in our industry that I've come across over the years that are great at self-promotion. Not in a cocky way, but just in a way where you say, you know what, that person is probably either advanced a little further than they should have or is where they deserve to be. Because they're really, really good at that. And then there's a lot of people who are ultra-talented who may not ever get there because their self-promotion is somewhat lacking. But you're right about politicians. I've never really thought about that. And here we are talking about this on the day of the first presidential debate of this cycle. But, yeah, you've got to essentially constantly make the case for why you're the best option and why you're better than the other people. That's so awkward.
I know. And the comics who do it, and that's when in any individual industry – the comics that get the furthest, the fastest, are great at promotion. And then there's idiots like me that are like, I wish I could get that, just at home on my couch, sad. Because I'm bad at it.
Good luck.
I marvel at it, that's all.
What is he running for?
Marcus Goodwin, running for, he's one of 23 candidates for 3 at-large seats. He's a
no
great dude.
Way.
And it is an incredibly hotly contested race, as you can imagine. But there are 23 candidates for 3 at-large seats.
That is wacky. He's Danny, I'm Grant. That is hour number 2 in the book. Beltway Blitz at noon. We're talking Rivera on Haskins, 12:18 on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.